Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
I'm Mary Barron. I'm an associate professor of English at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I'm also teaching a creative writing class in the state jail. I teach one night a week in the Fairbanks Correctional Center. At the moment, I have 23 men. We meet in a classroom upstairs. We're locked on the second floor, but not locked in the classroom. The class is about 14 or 15 Native Alaskans out of the 23, mostly Inupiat, but three or four Athabascans. We do all kinds of writing. We do a lot of work on newsprint to get them going. Read their work back. Almost all of them will now read their work back. This is a new development. It's a tricky place to teach creative writing. There are some peculiar problems, like anything the men write may be used against them in court if they're not sentenced, and they have to be warned about that. And then in the next breath I say, and be honest or there's no point in writing, and that makes for really interesting dynamics. I'm now perfectly comfortable there, but when I was first teaching there, I was very frightened for the first week or two until the men sat me down and said, hey, you're safer here than you are on 2 Street, lady, which is true, I think. I get some amazing work out of them because they have a great deal of time to think and they're under a great deal of pressure and it comes out with a sort of explosive force.
Your lies. Make sure you tell them it's lies. You got it?
Lies. I love staying in jail, easy living. I hate the silence of nature. I was a shaman. I wasn't a normal boy, very loving. I had a gold mine to myself. I own an oil well. Yesterday the sky fell down. Today the sun flew away. Tomorrow day becomes night, night becomes day. The moon turns yellow.
That was good, right? I like that one.
Oh, I'm a good liar.
Yeah, practice, huh?
For most of them, writing anything down is a new experience. So I usually start them on newsprint, and then we'll look at it and say, well, if you cut that up in lines, that's kind of a poem, or it looks a lot like a story, or maybe that's kind of like a stick dance chant, or maybe we could make it into a thriller, or, you know, things of that sort. So sort of get it on paper first and then see where it's going. Once I'm in the classroom, I actually kind of forget that I'm in the jail for 3 or 4 minutes at a time until someone says something that reminds you forcefully. The students in the jail are extremely responsive. They really want to be in that class. There are reasons for taking classes in there that don't mean you really want to be in there, like it looks good for the parole board. But these guys really want to be there, and they really are anxious to improve their writing skills.
Imagine you are an animal. Think about how it would feel to be that animal. Go.
What was it? I wish I was, or if I was?
If I was, no, I would.
It's got to be an animal then.
Any animal you want, yeah. If you have a sacred animal or a special animal, make it that one.
I'm an Eskimo and I sometimes hunt polar bear.
Read mine. Tell me if it did.
Did these have to make sense at all?
I just one of the first animals that came to my mind. I'm a polar bear in the high Arctic, gazing into the never-ending darkness in winter. In search of food constantly, my worst enemy being man. Though he's smaller than I, he's devised a weapon even I am not immune to. The seal nourishes me during my cup-bearing and through that long, unending day of summer. I hunt seal, but the seal seems to be more alert than the unending night.
You said you've been hunting polar bears before. Have you killed polar bears?
Yeah. I've killed one. It's right in the town of Barrow. And we were on our construction site working, and some people were saying there was a fox in the lagoon. We didn't know where to go look, and it was a polar bear. So I dropped my tools and went home, got my rifle, and went after the polar bear. I got there before the police did.
What'd you do with the polar bear then?
Well, my first polar bear, so I had my mom cook it up and have whoever wanted to go over and eat some of it. The people in the town. That same day, my dad, he was out on a fall whaling, and he caught a polar bear too. So we had enough polar bear to feed the whole town.
Did you ever write about that day?
No, I've never wrote about it. This is the first time I've said anything about it.
Have you done much writing before?
No, this is the first time I've ever been writing in this class.
What made you decide to start writing, to take the class and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it keeps my mind away from worrying. Worrying about the long stay I have to stay there in jail. Keep my mind off of that.
How long have you been here?
About 9 months.
How much longer you got to go?
Another 3 years.
If I was a saber-toothed tiger, I'd have my den on high. My food I'd keep in safe places, from floods, ice ages, and earthquakes, and all those other meat eaters. And I'd say I knew those other species that no longer roam these ages.
It's nothing.
If I was an eagle, I would be flying high on the endangered species list. If I was a walrus, my tusks would be shaped and shiny in the end. If I was a plankton, there would be so many of us, the whale would probably miss me, and I would continue swirling around in the sea. A Greenland Eskimo legend about the Tupaluk, a monster that ate the old people who were left on the ice, a body like a human, but walked on all fours. The Tupaluk never slept or rested, always looking for the people who took a long, long time to die. The people lived for a long time. That's why the Tupaluk was skinny, with ribs showing, and the spine showed their bumps. If I was a Tupaluk, I'd be in the people disposing business, with no particular interest, just bones down, and there would be only one of me. There is only one Tupaluk, the saying goes.
If I was a little red fox, I'd sit on the beach looking rather shy and sly, staring in curiosity at the goings-on of the other small creatures, rubbing my ear for the swarming flies.
How did you decide on a red fox?
I was riding in a boat one time and on the Yukon River, and there was this fox on the beach staring at us, and we went to the fish wheel, and I had some fish in there. I took one fish off and threw it to the fox. Grabbed it and ran away.
What made you decide to sign up for this class?
Oh, just to get out of the dorm, mostly. Something to do.
You've been in for a long time?
Since August 18th. Probably looking at, I haven't been sentenced yet, but I'm looking at 5 years or anything, something like that.
You think you might do some more writing in the rest of those years?
Yes, a lot of time.
What you got here?
It's a poem I wrote, but it translated into Inupiaq. Nanuuguma tuwakpomi ukiumi kammailuni iwaalunga natchimik angurak raurunga ki inyusukkuma akilya angunti angun mikigaluaktu sawaliungarok suppunmik uwangauni angiruanga makitap kasuitkaanga Natchimin Phoni Singavlunga Iwasurunga Asin
We have to fill these things out, huh?
If you are willing to, you don't have to. Asin Kam Asin Kamma Sunga Nyami Pinagamang Natchik Natchik siok tungasi. Natchik pinyalri nyakayakto. Ukiumin takaro sunganyami. Tavura.
This is a poem I wrote for the first group of men I worked with in the jail after a long conversation we had about how frightened I was when I first came in. Writing class, Fairbanks Correctional Center. I am stunned by the pain in this room. It smashes into me like body blows. Reading your words back to you, I am in control of myself only despite myself. I seem to be watching this from far away. I thought I was one. I am many. All week, your faces bloom under my eyelids. In my dreams, we walk the streets, but are often apprehended. Last week, I threw away every extra key I could find. I have silenced the ones I must bring with me. Tonight, entering the jail, my body shrinks into survival, a sharp tone in someone's voice. I move quickly through ID check, through the barred doors, upstairs to this room. What can we build, brothers? We have absence, anger, emptiness. We have endurance, language, time.
I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage,
how things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Hey, Things to do in jail. Things to do. Doing time with yourself. Dreaming dreams in hopes of reality. Only to have them shattered by the ringing of keys, the boisterous voice of the guard hollering, 5 minutes. Things to do, breakfast, SOS again. Back to the dorm, to the security of your bed, awaiting work call. Things to do, door opening, guard hollering, work call. Shuffling of feet, a quick scramble for the door, swerving blindly, half sleepingly, to destinations programmed in your head. Some walking aimlessly, wondering where to plant their feet. A safe place. Where? Things to do. Lunchtime. What? Steak? Someone important must be coming. Back to dorm. Waiting. A favorite pastime. Door opening. God hollering. Medication. The sick, the lame, and the healthy. All waiting for, in quotation, the answer to freedom. What? There I said it. A release from reality. Things to do, waiting. Gym call, mail call, and nature's call. Things to do, waiting, dreaming. Illusions, ah yes, fantasies come true. Wow, she's here, here with me, lying on the bed, the floor. Gym hollers, a guard, image shattered, lost. Things to do. Back from gym, waiting, supper time, wow, liver. It's peanut butter jelly sandwich time. Back to dorm, waiting. Med call, newspaper, and goodie box, waiting. Jim hollers a guard, scrambling of feet, running. Low whispers, mumbling and chuckling. Air is alive with vibrations. There's life once again. Things to do. Back from Jim, waiting. A few sighs, groan, and grunts. Exchange of words, smile. Water running, shower time. Things to do.
Things to Do was written by Edgar Jackson of Unalakleet, one of 23 prisoners participating in a creative writing class being held at the Fairbanks Correctional Center. On today's Chinook, we'll hear the works of two of those participants. First, Edgar Jackson.
My grandfather, my teacher, and friend. He walked with his shoulders stooped, and in standing straight, he brings to mind the mountains. He was a hard man, gentle yet domineering. A man of many words, mostly grunts. But when he spoke, his voice carried an authority no one challenged. A deep voice, soothing. Behind every word was a story, a meaning. His eyes deep, penetrating, always searching, looking and knowing what tomorrow will bring. His face full of wrinkles, telling us he weathered the storm, the hardships. Just looking at his face, you could tell, you could see the story, his story he never told. I've learned to love that man, despite his righteousness. I'm only 5. He took me under his care and taught me life, love, understanding, and God. Grandfather, are you there? Grunt. Did I chop enough wood? I'm tired. Silence. I once asked him why he bothered with me. He looked at me and said, out of all my grandchildren, you were the only one who promised strength. I looked at you and seen the stubbornness, the will to keep going even if you fail. I knew right then that I was going to teach you all I know. That was the longest speech I heard him make. He turned and walked towards the house. I followed. Inside, he lays down on the bed, closes his eyes and sleep. I sit on the chair, watching him, trying to understand the words he spoke to me. I'm only 5. I looked outside, still thinking of the words he spoke to me. The sun is setting. Then the words struck home. I smile. It's peaceful, as if commemorating my journey into manhood, and I'm only 5. He was a strict teacher, sometimes pushing me beyond my endurance. And I live for those days he talked to me, taught me with words he carefully chose to help me understand his world, his beliefs, his conviction, his God. He once told me, Always be kind to your fellow man. He's the only friend you have. It took me 30 years to understand that statement. I worked, I listened, I watched. I worked, I listened, I learned. Gone were my childhood sorrows, the sadness I felt whenever I held a toy. Gone were my desires, only to be replaced by new ideas, new skills, new beliefs, and new responsibilities. I submerged myself in his teachings. His teachings became my friend, my toy, and my dreams. Grandfather, it's time to check the net. He looks at me and smiles, nods his head. He never bothered or said anything twice. He was a very religious man. I once asked him why he never went to church. He looked at me for a long time thinking. He finally said, there is only one God, one spirit, and one religion. And that's to know the truth, seek the truth, and live by the truth. Truth is love. Love is God. This gentle giant taught me not only how to live with others, but how to survive in a world not our own. Many times he would look at me with a sad expression and say, our way of life is changing fast, and you need to accept these changes. Yes, he's seen what was happening to our culture. It was slowly fading into the background. He wasn't angry, just sad. How often I would look at him and ask him what he meant. His only answer, you'll see. Yes, I have seen. And when he died, my whole world was turned upside down. Fortunately for me, a young woman was always near. And when I needed her, another journey begins.
Earl Erickson of Fort Yukon is another member of the class.
It was about 3 or 4 years back when my friend and I went firefighting. We were both 18 years old, and that was our first fire. Fire boss picked us out of the crowd and told us to sign up. So we signed our names and social security numbers. Then the fire boss told us to go home and pack the things we would need and be back in 30 minutes. So my friend and I went home to pack the things we needed. And be back before 30 minutes was up. We both got 2 pairs of pants, 2 wool shirts, underclothes, knives, and 4 pairs of wool socks. We got back just in time to hear the fire boss telling the crew that we were all going to a fire about 260 miles north of our hometown. In one crew, there is 16 people. So they took us out to the fire with a helicopter, 8 at a time. My friend and I took the second trip out to the fire. As soon as we got there, the fire boss put the crew to work. We were on the west side of the fire, and the wind was blowing east, so we started cutting the trees and willows down and threw the trees on the side that's not burned. We did that for 3 miles, and it took us 4 hours to get that far. We had 3 chainsaws, and my friend and I were operating the chainsaws. And the rest of the crew were using firefighting axes. We were way ahead of the crew and didn't know that the crew had stopped working. But my friend and I didn't even notice that and kept on working. We were working so hard we didn't even notice that the wind had changed directions. The wind started to blow toward us. But we kept on working for 10 minutes and all of a sudden we saw this big orange flame shooting toward us. I told my friend, let's get out of here. We left the chainsaws there and took off running back through the fire line we just cut. And right behind us the trees exploded into big orange flames. As we ran, a blast of hot air and wind overtook us as we ran through clouds of swirling smoke. It was so smoky we didn't even know the right direction to run. I stumbled over a log and my friend grabbed my arm and pulled me up. There was no time to even thank him as we ran on. After we ran about a mile from where the fire exploded, we stood there and breathed in deeply the clean, fresh air. My friend and I were very happy to be alive. After the fire boss counted the crew, he said there was 2 guys missing from the crew. We all looked worried and scared that something bad had happened to them. But the fire boss got his radio and called the station. He told them that there was two guys missing from the crew. And he also told them about the runaway fire. They told the fire boss they'll send a plane out right away. We waited and waited. Finally, the plane showed up 15 minutes later. And the plane was a B-52 bomber. It flew right over the top of the trees, making a loud, thundering noise. It made a big circle right over us and went diving into the clouds of smoke and disappeared. Then it reappeared on the far side of the fire and made another big circle and dove down into the smoke. And this time it came out right in front of the fire. And from its belly came a burst of pink, red retardant. The bomber did that three times and the runaway fire collapsed immediately. We all started walking along the fire line, looking for the two missing guys. We were all looking at this smoke when ahead of us, out of the smoke, came the two guys that were missing. They told us that there was a small pond on that side of the fire, and they had jumped in the pond. We were all very happy that they were both alive, and we all gathered our stuff and went back to the camp for the night and slept. All night it rained, and most of the fire went out by the rain. The next day there was a few hot spots here and there, so we stayed another couple of nights and put the fire out. We packed everything and the helicopter came and took all the crews home. This one here, I don't know how good it is, but it's about that an old lady and her son. A long time ago, there was an old lady who lived in the village called Gold City. She was about 90 years old, and the people in the village were very fond of her because she told a lot of very good stories about the way it was in the old days when she was a little girl. Start like this. One day, while she was outside, she had noticed a man coming her way. The man was her son, who she hadn't seen for 7 years since he went to war. The old woman was very happy to see her son. That night she told everybody in the village to come to the dance hall. Then she told the people that she wanted to have a party for her son who got back from the war. The people in the village agreed with her ideas, and the next day at the dance hall all the people gathered food and had a big potlatch dance, and the old lady told a lot of very good stories. For about 4 hours, she told good stories. Everybody had enjoyed the celebration. They all thanked the old lady for the good stories and for having a good potlatch for her son.
Earl Erickson. Earlier, we heard the poetry of Edgar Jackson. Both are members of the creative writing class being held at the Fairbanks Correctional Center. For Chinook, I'm Phil Falkowski. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan. Welcome to Chinook. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. The music is Herbie Vance. He's an Athabascan Indian musician from Hooslea and well known along the Keokuk and Yukon rivers. The guitarist, who's originally from Cutoff, has two commercial releases on cassette. The first, released in 1981, contains just two vent compositions, but the second, produced in 1982, has nine vent tunes among the 12. The cassette album is called Original Herbie Vent, Keokuk River Boogie.
That Keokuk River Boogie is the original way I've been doing my music for over 25 years. If there was a dance tonight at 10 o'clock, starting at 10 o'clock, I'd play rock and roll all night, and I'd perform all night, and people would love it. But for years that I played, people do respect me and do like me. So I kind of made that Keokuk River Boogie a special dedication to the whole Keokuk and Yukon River. I've been a musician for 25 years, and my hobby is music. For a very long time, I didn't have any intention of coming out with an album, cassette album. But the last 3 years, I've been trying to get away to attract this younger generation to do something for themselves.
What does the music have to do with that?
Well, a lot of these young kids like my music, and adults too. And I've been performing in each village with a 3 or 4 piece band, wherever they're available. I figure if they like me, they'll try something in the future if they have talent. As for anything, they could try.
How did you get into music? How did you learn to play the electric guitar and sing?
Well, that's a long story. To make a long story short, it was from 1948 to 1955. I was really small. I must have been about 10 or 11 years old, according to my mother. And she bought me a guitar for $35. And Hank Williams was popular at that time. And I used to do a lot of babysitting when I was small. I used to come almost all the time. So I used to turn on this. Dad bought this big radio that runs off a battery. It's just like a stereo. And I used to pluck along with Hank Williams songs. But my mother said from the time I was really small, I had a touch for music to begin with. I imitated when I was between 18 to 25. And all my life I've been a music lover, any kind of music, but I have my own unique style.
So you're self-taught then?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Seems like Hank Williams is a big influence on your music today.
It is, because for me, when I record my album, I made mostly dance music that I've been playing for years. And then I made two country and western songs in there. One is titled Adelina. That's in my heart. You're so sweet. My most beautiful song I ever put out was Adelina. And the song Adelina was sort of a love song in a western country style. And I was going to dedicate it to my wife. Adelina, you're the one that I love. When the music played as we were dancing, your lips so close to me. Oh,
sit here in my room. I could see your sweet smile far away. Oh, how I wish that you were in my arms. Adelina, you're the one that I love. But every evening I go trolling alone, wishing you were walking by my side. Oh, so close to me you would be, my sweet Adelina. Adelina, you're the one that I love.
You've got one song that's not in English entirely, that's Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's the only one of its kind on this cassette album. Are you planning on doing any more things like that?
I dedicated that song to my four or five grandfathers that taught me to respect and to appreciate anything that's available to a person. So I kind of dedicated this song for a plea for us to hold our culture. I said, hey, Indian chief, don't let us go, because if you do, we're going to lose. Meaning, we're going to lose our culture, and then if we lose pride in our great grandfathers, we're going to lose our touch for our chiefs. It's like, that's the way I feel.
Some of your other songs deal with a different sort of loss, loss of self-esteem perhaps, like Two Street Blues.
Standing on a corner, downtown 2nd Avenue, looking across to other park view. Standing by co-op is my favorite view.
Hey. Make that song because it's kind of a classical thing to me. I'm not saying that every Alaskan Native is a two-street lover, but it's a kind of half tradition, not traditional, but a half song that's classical-like. You look at somebody who made a song on a ballad sound, you know, a ballad song. Well, I wanted to make this song because I want to tell a story about Two Street and how I felt. Of course, I never did it. I never hang around 2nd Avenue, but I kind of want to dedicate a song to that area, so I made that song.
Tell me something about Funky Huslia.
Kids always like to dance, all these young kids, and they always say, Herbie, you gonna play guitar tonight? Every time there's a little available activity going on in town. So I kind of thought, well, I'm gonna make a song for all my kids in Whistler or any interior village that will be remembered. So I made that song called Funky Whistler. I'm leading a kind of confusing life right now, you know. I'm a sort of an artist and a star, and I get a lot of compliments. A lot of strange people walk up to me and say, hi Herbie, all I want to do is have the honor of meeting you. And I'm kind of living a fast life, but of course I'm definitely a married family man. So I'm playing it very cool as far as business is concerned.
How do you feel about being a local star?
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel responsible. It makes me love the people for what they think of me. And I hope in the future it will all be like that, always.
Herbie Vent, Athabascan Indian musician from Huslia, a 45-year-old rock and roller. His cassette album, Original Herbie Vent, Koyukuk River Boogie, was financed by Coatzina Limited, the combined village corporations of Alatna, Allakaket, Hughes, and Huslia. Vent's next project is a country and western album. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.